Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, kids. Welcome to the podcast. My name is Chris Paulette. I'm an editor here at HowStuffWorks. And sitting next to me, as always, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Hey there, everyone.
We were going to... I don't know. Take it down a notch.
Yeah,
maybe mellow out with a couple guys from born in 1955.
Yeah, a couple guys who, you know, they sort of had that typical experience of the growing up during the whole counterculture movement, tried college for a while, decided it wasn't for them. They both are college dropouts, and yet they both managed to have a somewhat significant impact on the tech world.
Well, you know, if you use a Microsoft product or an Apple product, yeah.
Yep.
That's a pretty minor impact.
We're talking here about William Billy Gates and Stephen Paul Jobs.
Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's his name.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Both of these guys, they've been sort of grouped together for a very long time. In fact, there was even a movie starring Noah Wiley and Anthony Michael Hall called Pirates of Silicon Valley, made about these two. And, you know, really when you look at them together, yes, they were both born in the same year. They were, they both dropped out of college, and they're both huge people in the tech industry.
And they both founded their own companies in 1975.
Yeah, there you go.
So both when they were 20 years old, they founded a company, dropped out of college to found a company. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I've just lost them. I've never found them.
No. Yeah. I've not been very fortunate in finding companies either.
So anyway, so we were thinking about starting with Mr. Jobs?
I was, and there are a lot of interesting parallels, but I think the more interesting parts are sort of the places where Jobs and Gates are not alike.
Oh, yeah.
But, I'll start with Jobs. Okay, so came from, born in California and went to school. Didn't seem to be a huge enthusiastic student, I guess you could say. But he did go to some Hewlett-Packard electronics lectures that he really got interested in. That's where he met a certain fellow by the name of Stephen Wozniak.
Oh, yeah.
Woz.
Yeah. Jobs actually worked at HP for a while.
Yeah, he did.
And the two of those guys went to Atari.
Right. Yeah. Between his HP experience and his Atari experience, he did attend one semester of college.
Yeah, he went to Reed College
in
Oregon, which is famous for its counterculture, or semi-famous for its counterculture.
Yes, and we have to mention something. We had a specific request for this podcast.
Okay.
Yes, our colleague Josh Clark wanted us to point out that one thing that sets Jobs apart from Gates is that Jobs apparently dropped acid. So this is according to our colleague Josh Clark. You can direct all ire at him.
From what I understand, he even after he dropped out of college, went to India for a while to explore some spirituality.
And
he was really into, you know, learning more about the spiritual side of life.
Sure. Yeah. He's considers himself a Buddhist. He's very much in touch with that part of his life, which is kind of interesting if you learn a little more about his personality, because it doesn't seem like the typical, I don't know, Buddhist sort of approach to life.
No, I would say not.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves. We should go a little more slowly, I guess. Yeah. So Woz and Jobs are over at Atari and they're designing video games. And after a while, Jobs gets this crazy idea. He thinks, hey, you know what we should do is build a computer that could be used in the home. Because up to that point, computers were pretty much these enormous devices that really existed only in the realms of the government and large universities.
Yeah, and the people who were interested in ideas like Jobs and Woz were at this point were hobbyists.
Yeah.
We're talking Radio Shack boxes of switches and diodes and electronics that you wired together to make a very rudimentary machine.
Yeah, like the Altair.
Yes.
So,
which we'll come back to.
Yes. So Jobs ends up convincing Wozniak that, hey, this is a great idea. Let's actually try and do this. Because here's the other interesting thing about Jobs is that he's a brilliant man. There is no denying the fact that Jobs is brilliant. I mean, you can't get around it.
Right.
But he is not the engineer when it comes down to the whole Apple story. That would pretty much fall on Wozniak's shoulders, at least in the early years.
Yeah, I mean, the two of them were both interested in electronics and engineering, but Woz is really he was the phone freak. He was definitely into the technology and fiddling with electronics end of it, where I think for Steve Jobs, it was more a means to an end.
Yeah, Jobs recognized the potential of creating a brand new product market. And he saw that it could be very lucrative. And he knew that Wozniak had the ability to bring this into life, as it were. So together, the two of them worked on building some computers, and they got a local computer store interested in their products. And the computer store actually ordered several. It depends on the sources you read. I've read everything from 25 to 55 machines. And with the money they made from that, that's where they decided to create the company Apple.
Yeah, we're in the realm of the Apple One, which was very much the pictures I've seen of it are pretty rudimentary compared to what you would see on your desktop. You know, wooden box, and it's got, you know, the electronics inside of it, and you'd hook it up to a TV. And of course they chose, being Jobs and Woz, they chose a very interesting price point.
Yes. $666. It was the computer of the beast.
Yes. Yes. And they actually sold. They sold quite a few of these machines.
Yeah. This was in 1976. So that's a pretty good chunk of change. You know, you think today, like a $600 computer isn't that expensive, but in $76, that was a healthy purchase.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, a year after they introduced the Apple One, they go back, they retool it, they introduce the Apple Two, which was a little bit more advanced, as you would expect, and, incorporated some other technologies, including a monitor. And, this is where my story about computers kind of comes into play, because my first real experience with computers was with an Apple IIe.
I see. Well, I'm willing to bet that lots of the people listening to the podcast at this point had an Apple II of some kind. in their school.
Any in our age range.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Our younger listeners, not so much.
Or at least they know what they are. And,
yeah, they've probably seen one.
Thinking about those giant 5 1/4 inch floppy disk drives.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
An Oregon Trail and lemonade stand and all that stuff.
Yeah. Oregon Trail. nostalgia is so sweet.
But the Apple II was really where a lot of people first came in contact with computers.
Yeah.
And it spurred a lot of people to start programming, start fiddling around with the idea of having computers on desktops for work or, you know, for their home for educational purposes. And
in fact, that's why we had one. My father is an author. So he purchased the computer as a way so that he could, you know, write books and he could store them on disks. And suddenly, you know, you didn't have to worry about a paper copy suddenly being ruined by your 5-year-old son spilling coffee all over it. Although I should add that his son, being me, did once turn off his computer before he had saved his chapters. And so I am personally responsible for deleting, I think it's 3 chapters of my father's work.
Nice.
Yeah, it was good times.
Good
so,
job.
But yeah, within 3 years of the Apple II coming out, it had earned almost $140 million.
I mean,
that's a lot of money. And so that's when Jobs and Wozniak decided to go public with the company. So 1980, Apple goes public. And the shares were, I think, at $22 a share when it first went public and then shot up to $29 by the end of the first day.
Wow.
So, yeah, this was – a lot of people were really excited about this company. And it was right around this time that IBM started to try and make headway into the consumer market. Now, IBM had been producing machines for years. But
decades.
Exactly. So these machines, though, were mainly these large machines used in
mainframes.
Yeah, mainframe computers, not like personal computers. But they decided to try and get into the personal computer business, and they were taking a slightly different route than Apple and using a completely incompatible operating system than Apple's at certain points. So there were a lot of strong decisions that needed to be made. Jobs had to decide whether or not to stay the course and continue doing what he was doing or to try and find a way to merge Apple with IBM, like some sort of operating system that could work on both. And there were some serious attempts at that for many years, and it never happened, at least not on any large scale.
Right. And for those of you playing at home who weren't around during this time, we're talking a lot of this stuff is, you know, we didn't have mice really for the most part for a lot of these early years. We're talking keyboard commands and the disk operating system that the IBM PC ran on. You know, it's very clunky. For those of you who weren't there to see it. So some of the changes that came up, were sort of the result of Apple's successes because they got so large that they started branching off into different products, including some that, started using mice.
Yeah. Was that Lisa?
Yeah. Well, the Apple Lisa, many of which are in landfills now.
Right.
Were extremely expensive machines.
Yeah, $10,000.
Yes, exactly. They were all in ones. And they were controlled by mice.
Yeah.
They did have mice. Yeah. And, there was another product that came out right about the same time as the Lisa that, Steve Jobs, was working on. The CEO had put him on the project because he had become one of the directors in the company, but he was no longer directly in charge of Apple at that point.
Are you thinking of the Macintosh computer?
That would be the one.
Because we totally skipped over the Apple III.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot about the Apple III.
Yeah, well, most people did.
Oh, that's right.
Because the Apple III ended up – here's the thing about the Apple III. There was a problem early in the production, and Apple had to recall around 14,000 units. And after that, it just couldn't get a grip on the market because no one trusted it. I wonder, can you think of any current – products that people have a growing mistrust about, even though it seems like all the problems have been fixed?
I'm thinking of,
we can talk about that when we get to Gates, I guess, because it's interesting that right now there's a product that is experiencing the same problem. Early on, it had problems. They fixed the problems, and yet no one wants to use it.
I suppose it depends on your Outlook or your Vista.
Yeah, your Vista.
Anyhow.
So back to the Macintosh. Yeah, now the Macintosh was really designed to compete directly with the PC. So now we've got our classic matchup here, the Mac and the PC.
And the Mac had an advantage because it used a graphical user interface.
And yes, which was very similar to one that Xerox created, was it not?
Yes, it was.
Almost identical. But that's funny because future versions of a program called Windows, people would accuse Microsoft of creating Windows to essentially recreate the Macintosh experience. And the Macintosh experience was kind of recreating the Xerox experience.
Well, you know, that shrewd guy over at Microsoft, I can't remember his name.
Yeah, we'll get to him.
Managed to convince Apple to let them license the Macintosh operating system.
Yeah.
So that they could build Windows.
And the Macintosh was, at the time of its arrival, a superior machine to the PC. It had a better memory, it had a better processor, but it was also more expensive, which, you know what? Hey, some things never change. And also around this time was the infamous Super Bowl ad.
Oh, yes.
The 1984 Super Bowl ad. Now, this was a Macintosh ad that was very Orwellian in nature. It was this very dreary world where everyone was bald, and which, you know, I identify with. And sitting at desks and stuff, and then you had the female athlete run in and hurl a hammer essentially through a giant screen, and it was very dramatic.
Well, that was the thing, was that in 1983, there weren't graphical user interfaces, at
right.
least not on everyone's desktop. So that was the point of the ad, was that 1984 wouldn't be like 1984, the book. So this was the big introduction for the Macintosh in general, was the famous 1984 ad.
Right. And it's around this time also that Steve Jobs brings in a guy to help run the Apple company to make it, you know, more successful against the PCs, a guy named John Sculley, who was from Pepsi. And this turned out to not be such a great decision. I mean, in the end, I guess it was, but not in the short term. So Jobs brings in Sculley, and Sculley, by 1985, thinks Jobs is more of a problem than an asset for Apple.
Yeah, that's true. You see, Jobs is, he's got a bit of a strong personality.
Yeah, that's a light way of putting it.
Yeah, a very, yeah.
He's known for, throwing, things and people around. No, he's known for throwing tantrums. he's known for throwing tantrums, or maybe that's probably the wrong term for it, but he is known for getting very, very angry and making sure people knew about it.
Well, it's no secret that in his days at Apple, when he ticks someone off and he has been known to fire people with a very hair trigger sort of spirit, it's called getting steved.
Right.
And that's really no surprise.
So here's the thing, was that Steve got steved.
Yeah.
So in 1985, he gets steved.
Well, sort of. He decided, they basically had relegated him to second class or maybe even fifth class status.
They pretty much stripped him of all his power. They put him in a totally different building, which he dubbed Siberia. And they put him on meaningless projects, and nothing of importance ever seemed to cross his desk. So eventually he said, you know what? I get the message loud and clear. I've done what I set out to do here, and I'm not getting to do the things I want to do. And if I can't do them here, I'll do them somewhere else. So he took a little bit of a break. He resigned from Apple, and then he founded the Next Corporation.
Yeah. Now, Steve had been working on some different educational projects at Apple, and Next was designed, or at least conceived in Steve Jobs' head, to be an educational computer system.
Right.
And it was more advanced. It was supposed to run cross-platform on different processors. And they actually did. They produced hardware, a box plus an operating system.
Right. The problem though was, again, the physical computers were a lot of people considered them to be too expensive. So they never really found a foothold, in the market. I mean, they sold some, but they didn't sell as many as they needed to. And eventually Jobs made the decision to get away from hardware and concentrate mainly on software and operating systems.
Although that machine was pretty sexy looking. It was kind of Borg cubish.
Yeah. Yeah.
Meanwhile at Apple, things were going downhill, and that's putting it very mildly. They had come out with a whole string of products that didn't make any sense. Model numbers, the quality of the box the actual computers themselves, they were not always
They didn't meet the earlier standards that Jobs had demanded back when he was in charge. And then – so a decade goes by. And by 1997, Apple is on the brink of bankruptcy. The company purchases the next corporation, which, you know, now Steve Jobs is now back under the umbrella of Apple. And in fact, Jobs makes a move and essentially wrests control back so that he's in charge of Apple again.
Yeah, I'm not so certain that Gil Amelio was very sad about that. He seemed to be sort of happy with that, because I think, you know, where Scully was not exactly thrilled with Jobs' outlook on the computer company, I think that he had convinced Emilio that he could do the work necessary. And I think, well, a lot of people at the time said that Apple didn't buy Next; they bought Steve Jobs back.
Right.
So it's not as surprising. There was something else, another little project that Steve Jobs worked on in the meantime too. He bought a part of the LucasArts company, the computer animation studio, for $10 million.
Right,
which never amounted to anything.
No, well, not under its original name, but it changed its name to Pixar.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Pixar, of course, being the movie company that brought us such wonderful things as a Toy Story, A Bug's Life.
The Incredibles.
Cars. Well, you know,
Finding Nemo.
Everyone's got a
conquer. Oh, come on. Even Cars.
Okay.
So,
but yeah, so they were in charge of that. So yeah, that's Jobs was very savvy. He purchased that company.
No, not savvy. He bought it for $10 million. And, of course, in 2006, Disney bought it in an all stock purchase for $7.4 billion.
Right.
That's savvy.
Yeah. Yeah. But of course now Jobs is on the board for Disney. So yep, there's that as well. He owns part of Disney. So that's, that was a good investment.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
Now granted, I don't have $10 million to make those kind of investments. No. Otherwise you would see me totally wheeling and dealing. But anyway, so 1997, Jobs gets back into Apple. He fires the board and hires a new board of six members.
Completely revamped all the product lines, simplified everything.
And that's kind of where, you know, that's leading us up to present day. His decisions to really streamline things, make things look really, really sexy, control everything from the ground up. That's kind of what has defined Apple to this day. It's very much a closed system. And Jobs' point of view is that way he can guarantee quality. So yeah, his system is closed and his machines are more expensive, but they also look really nice and they work.
Yep. Just a note before we go to Bill Gates, now people are concerned, not sure exactly when this will be posted, but it was announced in December 2008 that Steve Jobs would not be leading the keynote at the Macworld Expo in January, which has caused some consternation because he's had some health issues. His death was falsely reported.
Yes.
And people are concerned now that he is so intertwined with Apple and its future that if something happens to him, if he steps down or if he were,
He's been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. He had a surgery to remove the tumor a year after they discovered it because he resisted the surgery. But and Apple actually got some flack for that because they didn't report that to shareholders. And some people say, well, you know, when your CEO has been diagnosed with a potentially fatal illness, the shareholders have a right to know because that could completely affect the shares of the company. The other side of that is that it's a private matter. It's a health matter. That's a sticky situation. But at any rate, he seemed to make a pretty good recovery, although people always comment on, you know, oh, he looks thin.
Yeah, he's lost weight, so people are concerned that that's
right.
A sign.
So there's some concern that maybe Jobs' health had something to do with him stepping away. I don't think that that's necessarily the case at all. It's just one of those unfortunate coincidences that can lead you to a faulty conclusion. Now, granted, that's not to say the conclusion is faulty. I could be totally wrong, but I'm willing to believe them on this one. And I was going to point out one other thing before we move on to Bill Gates, because it's an interesting counterpoint. So the Stanford Social Innovation Review founder once referred to Steve Jobs as or actually to Apple itself as America's least philanthropic company. and Apple in 97, it cut a lot of its philanthropic programs in a way to try and cut costs and never reinstituted them.
Man, I had no idea we could talk about Steve Jobs that long.
Yeah, neither, got a lot neither of did I. Well, since we've gone on so long, I'm guessing we should probably divide this up and have a part two.
Let's visit Mr. Gates in another podcast.
Yeah, next week we'll tackle Billy Gates.
Before we go, there's one other thing I'd like to share that I think is really cool about Steve Jobs.
So what's this amazing fact?
So I got one of these things that I just think is really cool. And it's the kind of thing that a showman like Steve Jobs would pull out. Back when they were trying to find a way to turn Apple around, Steve agreed to take a pay cut.
Oh, yeah.
He now makes, as the co-founder, chairman, and CEO of Apple, he makes $1 a year in salary. And that was so he could keep his medical benefits.
Yes.
Of course, he is compensated in other ways. He gets a little stock.
Yeah, he's got some stock, I guess. A couple billion.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's funny because with all the automakers talking about ways to do, you know, turn the companies around and Congress giving them a hard time about it, that's one of the things they've talked about doing is taking a pay cut to a dollar a year. So
pretty impressive.
Again, an innovator.
Then. Sounds good. Well, until then, check out some articles on HowStuffWorks.com. We've got everything from iPods to Apple Cloud computers on there, and that should keep you nice and entertained and educated throughout the week before we hit Billy. And we'll talk to you again soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, was good!
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.